morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Well, Denise, coming up here next week, we have a very exciting event that the Master Gardeners are going to be helping demonstrate for interested members of the community. And that's a rose pruning demonstration. And the year has gone by already so quickly. We're already halfway through February, practically. And it's time for people to start thinking about roses, right?
Exactly. Mid-February is the perfect time for El Pasoans to start pruning their roses. And the Master Gardeners Extension, we have a longstanding cooperation with the City of El Paso, Parks and Rec, and the El Paso Rose Society. Every group tends to the garden in certain ways. And at this point, the Master Gardeners are 90% done pruning all of those rose bushes out there. And they have close to 1,300 rose bushes to get through during the cold winter months. Rest assured, they have left some beds that have not been pruned. And that's really for that hands-on pruning demonstration that's going to be held on the 22nd and 23rd. The times for that is noon to 3. Master Gardeners will have a little walkthrough of the garden itself, and then they can actually look at some pruning techniques. If you have some questions or you want to get started with growing roses, they will also have an educational booth out there, people just answering some questions. And all of this really leads up into the opening of the season for the Rose Garden. The Rose Garden opens March 1st all the way up to the end of October. So this is really the big annual kickoff event to open that rose garden. And a lot of time and a lot of effort has gone into maintaining these roses. And we really want the public to enjoy that. And so come through.
And again, like you were saying, they were going to be there to answer any questions. They being, of course, the Master Gardeners. It's next Saturday and Sunday, noon to 3. You know, and speaking of gardening questions, we usually mention at the end of each show the Master Gardener hotline, which is 566-1276. I'll mention that again at the end of the show. But there is kind of a new feature on the Master Gardener website that allows people to ask their questions, right? Tell us more about that.
Exactly. Well, I'm really excited. You know, a lot of our information doesn't change. You know, we stick to our standard research-based information. But getting that information out to the public, well, that changes along with technology. So one exciting feature that's on the El Paso Master Gardener website is now we have a fillable form where somebody can go into the website and type in their contact information, their name, their phone number, and email address, and a brief description of the problem that they're having. And the bonus about that is that they're able to upload and attach a photo of the plant or something they want to get identified or some problem area. And that goes directly to the Master Gardeners, and they'll be able to answer your questions. We also understand that you have email access, and you know, certainly you can put your preference there. If you'd like a callback so you can have a conversation about it, that's also there. But I think that's a really, really key, really important thing that we want to make our website really interactive and have that conversation going back and forth. So I really encourage you all to try that and take advantage of that new technology and let us know how it's working out for you.
And we'll have that link on the Good to Grow page at ktep.org, and hopefully we'll make it easier for you to have your gardening questions answered. And Denise, I know that usually at this time of the year is when gardening questions start to pick up, right? And we were actually going to mention some last week on our live show if we didn't get any calls. But luckily we did get plenty of calls from people wanting to know what was going on with their garden. But there was one question you were telling me about last week about a procedure that I remember seeing growing up, which is you drive around town and every now and then you see a tree that's painted white. Now, first of all, tell us why people did it in the first place and maybe why or why not people may want to consider doing it now.
Right, exactly. Well, I think that painting of the tree trunks was kind of, you know, really fashionable at one time for some reason. Some people paint it to kind of protect the tree after they made some pruning cuts. And even some people even think that it's going to deter ants crawling up and down the bark. And please be advised that those techniques, that's not going to work for you. And we don't really encourage you painting any kind of bark or the pruning cuts that you make on the tree itself. What's really important is that when you do make a pruning cut, you want to use a clean tool. And you can certainly bleach out your tools after you use them. People can use bleach, or you can also use isopropyl alcohol, which is just the rubbing alcohol that you'll find in the store. You can just dilute that to disinfect your tools. And that's just to prevent from one tree having a pathogen and getting that to another tree. And it's just overall good, you know, sanitary techniques. And then, of course, when you're looking at that pruning cut that you're making, you don't want to go flush with the bark itself, because you're going to make a hole that's going to be bigger, a cut bigger than really what it needs to be. Once that cut is made and that pruning cut is there, you're going to see that exposed branch part on there. And what you need to do is the tree is going to trigger that as a wound, and it's going to start forming wood and callus around that. So you want to allow that natural process to happen. If you try to seal that up, and if there happens to be a pathogen already in there, what you're doing is you're sealing that pathogen into the plant, and then there's no way for it to escape. So if you allow that just to breathe and just be able to expose to the air, then your chances of having the actual pathogen and going in there is reduced.
I mean, and with a few exceptions, I think it's pretty clear where you want to prune, right? Because there's something on a branch that is called a collar. And, you know, it kind of is a collar, sort of a little rounded, raised thing maybe at the end of a branch. And that's kind of right up to where you want to cut. You don't want to cut the collar itself, but you want to cut up right as close to the collar as possible, right?
Exactly. And then what you do right before the collar is that you put an undercut. So that's going to be your undercut, your number one cut, before you do your second cut, which is going to be right on top. And that's going to help in case you go too far, or that bark is going to want to start like skinning off.
Yeah, it's a large branch.
Yes, and you don't want to skin any part of that bark off. So that undercut really kind of prevents you and has that little insurance that it's going to stop anything right there at that point. There's also some exceptions, of course, to painting the trees, and those are really limited to peach trees, these fruit trees that will get a sunburn and sun scald in our area. So those would be the only exceptions that I would say to put in the white paint on that. If you drive around town, are you looking at orchards, pecan orchards with very small pecan trees? They also put like a little protective cover on that. Mm-hmm. And that's really so that you can prevent those damaging sun rays just kind of sunburning that really sensitive bark until there's enough canopy and leaf cover to naturally shade the tree itself.
How much would you, if you do have a young peach tree and you're thinking of protecting it, how high up or how far out should you paint?
Well, that would be as far as you're going to get that shade from the leaves itself. So a couple of feet at the most. Mm-hmm. And then as the tree grows, you hope that it's going to get thicker and thicker. The girth of the trunk is going to get wider, and your canopy is going to try to cover all of that over. So at least for the first 3 years, you have to be really proactive to protect that peach or pecan tree.
So if you do choose to paint, what kind of paint? Because there's so many different kinds of paints out there. Is it the kind of paint you want to use to when you whitewash your fence? Or
right, exactly. You want to make sure that you get a product specifically labeled for this. And that's going to involve more of a gardening supply store, maybe a lot of online sales. There's some regional retailers that be able to help you out with that, but you have to look exactly for something labeled for the trees to prevent the sun scald.
Well, one problem that I specifically have witnessed, I was at my mom's house yesterday, and she's got this large juniper type bush that's taller than the house. It's just one of those large old ones, and this thing is probably about 35, 40 years old. And recently I saw that it was dripping sap, not actively dripping, but you could see the results of the sap around the base of the tree. It was very sticky. It looked wet. And then if you look up on some of the little leaves, I'm not sure if they're called leaves on a juniper, but I would see some very clear dripping sap dripping from those leaves. And we were talking about this before the show, and you said this could be perhaps a sign of some invasive pest.
One of those things about those arborvitae trees, and for our listeners, those are those upright, very popular evergreen trees. And the characteristics about that is they do have those green, bluish kind of little fruits at the middle of the season. And after looking at those pictures and talking a little bit about the tree with you, I would suggest to look even further into the main branches of that plant and look to see if you see any exit holes. And it really depends on what kind of insect that's in there, like what kind of borer on the size of the holes. It could be as small as a pencil tip. But take a look at that, see if there's anything that has exited that. A lot of times when the plants are under a lot of drought stress and conditions, then that makes it just a better environment for these invasive pests to come into. If you happen to see those exit holes and those holes, go ahead and start trimming out and thinning out those branches. So what you're going to really do is kind of work from the inside of the tree out. So it may look a little bare on the inside, but that does really two things. You physically remove the pest if there's one present. And the second thing that it does is it helps you assess if the tree is getting better, worse, or the same. You can't do that unless you physically remove those dead or damaged branches.
Well, another question that you were telling me about that you received on the hotline was the question of mulch versus compost. And I think this is a situation where I think many people would very easily get confused. And the question was from a lady who received information from you, and then she received information from her nursery.
We definitely talked about what she wanted to do. She wanted to start a vegetable garden from scratch, and we talked about soil amendments and what to get and what to look for and what to ask. And she was looking at a large piece of area that she was going to convert into a vegetable garden. And when we talked, she mentioned about compost, and what the recommendation was for her was to either get pine bark and pecan shells to replace the compost that she wanted to buy. And I think it's really important to distinguish what the difference between a mulch and a compost is going to do. A mulch is something that you want to put that's going to be 2 to 4 inches thick, but it's going to lay on top of your soil. And that's going to prevent weeds from coming up, and it's going to keep that water from evaporating on your soil surface. And your compost is going to be your soil amendment. You're always going to mix that into your soil. A compost is more of a finished product, what we call finished, which is going to have a real, you know, it's going to be almost like a soil texture. It's going to be real thick. It's going to smell very earthy, if you will, but you cannot distinguish specific shells or big pieces out of there. It's going to be a very usable product that once you mix into the soil, it's going to be essentially going to, you know, disappear. You won't be able to see it once it's mixed in. So I think that's really important. They're not really going to be interchangeable. As far as that, your pecan shells, yes, they'll eventually break down, eventually become compost. But when you purchase that, it's not going to be in that form, because there are a lot of different manufacturers and a lot of different labeling techniques that are out there. And people can be confused by that. So definitely, if you can see a sample of what you're trying to buy and feel it in your hand and see, you know, how big those little pieces are going to be, the bigger the stuff is going to be mulch, and your smaller finished product is going to be your compost.
Well, we're out of time for questions, but, you know, this is a time of year when questions are going to start coming up. Spring is just around the corner, and plants are starting to come up out of the ground. So we want to remind you once again of the Master Gardener Hotline, which is 566-1276. And if you go to the Good to Grow page at ktep.org, we'll have a link there to a Master Gardener site where you can ask your questions through the website, attach any photos, and they will be happy to respond to you either via email and or by phone. So check out ktep.org, where you can also listen to some of our past shows. We want to thank you so much for listening today. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.